multiple acts of hatred and cruelty between members of the same family. I often find myself climbing the King's Grand Staircase during the course of my working day, and the faces of the people populating it have always fascinated me. I've spent many hours studying them, wondering who they all were, and curiosity finally compelled me to try to find out. When I first began investigating their identities, I was surprised to discover that some of the names traditionally attached to the characters were wrong, while other obvious connections had been overlooked. My efforts to unearth each sitter's true story led me on a much longer and more exciting journey than I'd expected, through caches of court papers in London, Windsor, Oxford, and Suffolk. I found myself examining paintings at Buckingham Palace, gardens in Germany, and hitching lists from kind strangers in rural Hertfordshire. My adventures, both in and outside the archives, led eventually to this book. Those picked to sit for the staircase paintings were the most appealing, exotic, and memorable among the lower servants. Some of them possessed something rarer than rubies, the influence that came with access to the royal ear. Their colleagues included some of the oddest characters of the Georgian age: a dwarf comedian, a feral boy, a rapacious royal mistress, a mysterious turbaned Turk, bored if beautiful maids of honour. I've selected the stories of just seven of them to illuminate the strange phenomenon of the Georgian court and to give a new perspective upon the lives of the kings, queens, and princes inhabiting the rarefied court stratosphere above their heads. While the monarchy was slowly sinking in status throughout the 18th century, the glamour of the court still attracted the pretty, the witty, the pushy, and the powerful. But although Kensington Palace teemed with ambitious and clever people in search of fame and fashion, it was also a lonely place, and courtiers and servants alike often found themselves weary and heartsore. Success in their world demanded a level head and a cold heart. Secrets were never safe. A courtier had to keep up appearances in the face of gambling debts, loss of office, or even unwanted pregnancy. Thousands longed to be part of the court, but John Harvey, one of our seven, knew all too well that danger lay hidden behind the palace walls. "I do not know any people in the world," he wrote to a courtier colleague, "so much to be pitied as that gay young company with which you and I stand every day in the drawing room." Chapter 1. To the Palace. Really, it must be confessed that a court is a fine thing. It is the cause of so much show and splendour that people are kept gay and spirited. James Boswell, 1763. On the 25th of April, 1720, a special sense of anticipation was building in the fashionable parts of London. The party planned at St. James's Palace that night was the most hotly anticipated court occasion for many years. Nowhere was the excitement greater than in the rambling old mansion called Leicester House. This building, dominating the north side of Leicester Fields, was the home of the King's son and daughter-in-law, the Prince and Princess of Wales, George Augustus, 1683 to 1760, and Caroline, 1683 to 1737. While the prince and princess were losing their looks and fast approaching middle age, they remained a jovial, lively, and friendly couple. Tonight's entertainment, though, would sorely strain their good spirits. They were going to have to pay a reluctant visit to the court of King George I, 1660 to 1727. The late afternoon saw Prince George Augustus berating a clumsy servant as he struggled into an outfit of peacock splendour. He aimed to be always richly dressed, being fond of fine clothes. Bad-tempered, full of bluster, fond of music and of fighting, this prince would become best known as George II, the last British king to lead troops in person upon the battlefield. He struts through Britain's history books like a kind of tin.